Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're with us on a Minnesota station or on our national broadcast or listening on your favorite podcast, we're glad that you're here. Today, as we recognize Military Spouse Appreciation Month and Military Spouse Appreciation Day, we're taking time to honor the husbands and wives who serve right alongside the men and women in uniform. The observance dates back to 1984, when President Ronald Reagan issued a proclamation creating the first Military Spouse Day. The Department of Defense later set it on the Friday before Mother's Day each year, and in 1999, Congress designated May as National Military Spouse Appreciation Month, helping make spouse recognition a central part of how our nation marks this season. Joining me in the studio to talk about their experience as a military spouse is Christina Rost and Ron Stanger. Christina's husband serves as the Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, and Ron's wife currently serves on active duty with the Minnesota Army National Guard, assigned to the 34th Infantry Division. Christina and Ron, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
All right. Wonderful to have you here. And I think the best thing we can do is just try to get to know you a little bit. And Christina, I'd like to just start with you. If you could tell me a little bit about yourself. And I understand that you served as well. So tell us a little bit about your military service in addition to that.
Sure. So I grew up with a family that they were all in the service. My dad was in the Marine Corps. Grandfather was in the Army. So next best thing is for me to join. So I joined when I was 17, joined the Minnesota Army National Guard, served as a water purification specialist for 9 years, did 1 year of active duty with the, I don't even remember what they're called anymore.
One of them old units.
One of those old units.
Yeah, right.
So they went to Kuwait. I did rear detachment, so I stayed back.
Okay.
When I went over, and then did a year of active duty service with the family programs, the family assistance centers.
All right. And so how many total years of service did you have?
Nine years.
And obviously your spouse is currently serving, and has he been serving your entire marriage? Did you guys meet in service? How did you guys meet?
Yeah. So we met in actually Rosemount. So him and I were both serving in the military. I was with the Family Assistance Center during that time, and he was serving with the 34th ID as a, I think he was a admin person or something at that time. But, yeah, that's where we met.
Okay.
Yeah.
Down in Rosemount.
Down in Rosemount.
Which was the headquarters of the 34th Infantry Division at the time.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you for your service, and we'll talk more about what it means as a military spouse, because you've got unique experience on both sides, obviously. All right, Ron, what about you? I know that you served as well, so tell us a little bit about your military service and how things are going in that regard.
Yeah, I joined in 1993, just early December, shipped out to basic in January, came back and was with the 257th MP Company out of Roseville there for 2 years before the...
Yeah, the 257th MP Company, you know, that was the first unit that I joined too.
I know it was. And once the Minnesota Guard reorged and we became Fox Battery 151, uh-huh, with the Division Artillery, served there for several years until they reorged again, and we became the 850th Horizontal Engineer, yeah, Company. So I did a little over 20 years in the service here, all with Minnesota Guard here.
Yeah, that's interesting. Remind me again, what year did you join with the 257?
93 to 95.
Yeah, I joined back in 1987.
Yeah.
And nice. And then it was about that 95 time frame, end of 94, where I was getting ready to be moved out to Washington, D.C. to work at the Readiness Center.
Very nice.
So we had a little bit of time together,
yep,
in the 257. So tell me about how did you meet your spouse then?
Well, in the field artillery, my wife was a medic with Division Artillery, and I was on the gun 2, and I happened to become a casualty. up at Training Maneuvers in Camp Ripley there, and she was the medic that responded. So she got me evac'd out, and about a year later is when we kind of met back up at Camp Ripley again. I think I moved in about 5 days later, and it's been 26 years married ever since. So.
And so when you say you became a casualty, that was a real-world
incident? Real-world heat stroke.
Yep. Oh, God, okay.
Yep. I suffered heat exhaustion, and we had some wrong first aid performed on me by the crew, which is fine, you know, because it brought my wife and I together in the long run, you know. So
she saved your life.
She did.
Is there a day that goes by where she doesn't remind you of that?
No, it's all the time. So I do refer to myself as her knight in shining armor.
Sure.
She calls me the idiot wrapped in tinfoil. So we love each other. We're good.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So she saved your life. Yep. And then. You know, little did you know, or maybe you did know that, you know, soon thereafter you it's guys would it. Be, yep. Would be coming to start a relationship. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because both of you then, were serving, you're in service, but yet you meet your spouse who was also serving. So what was that dynamic like early on where you're both serving at the same time? Christine, I'll start with you.
You know, when Jason and I met, I was just on the deployment for when our thing went over. So I had to go. I actually had to go away for 3 months to do the train up.
Okay.
And that's when we started dating.
Gotcha.
So it was, you know, kind of a long distance relationship.
And, sure.
But we made it work. So I don't know.
Did you know, like? Because there's obviously there's still struggles of serving at the same time together. You're deploying. You know that deployments are going to happen. You know, obviously early on it wasn't all the same, but you're deploying a unit. So you knew that was always a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Were there any thoughts going through your head at the time about this relationship and what could be as far as a deployment relationship?
Not at the time, no. Okay. I wasn't, that's not what I was thinking about at all. In fact, I don't think I started thinking about it until after we got married.
Yeah.
And then, because I was pursuing a career in the Army, applied for some jobs, was trying to get that full time. And then I quickly realized my ETS was coming up and I had a choice to make.
Yeah.
So I decided at the moment that I didn't want to have kids.
Sure.
You know, with both of us deployed or.
Right.
Stuff.
And so you made that decision then to end your military career. And then obviously he stayed serving and now is the command senior enlisted leader. So he's been on active duty for a number of years with the Minnesota Guard.
Yeah, all the time. You know, I had to make the decision who's going to go further in their career in the military, me or Jason. And
yeah,
I wanted, you know, obviously it was Jason.
Right.
If anyone knows him.
So. Now, what about you, Ron? Because early on, obviously, you know, you guys are dating, you're going to have this relationship, but you're still serving. So did you have any concerns or reservations early on about what that meant to your relationship and to your career about deployments and just dual serving members?
No, not really. For me, if anyone knows me, I'm more of a let's go kind of individual, you know. So when I met her and we started dating, we're on the same drill schedule too, and at the time she had, and you know, still does. It's our daughter. When I met Jackie, she had a 2-year-old.
Okay,
and you know, so there's a young kid involved, a little one, you know, and I was all in from the get go, and she was all in from the get go. So there was no looking back. I wasn't worried about deployments or anything like that. I have a very strong family here in the cities. Our friends are very strong with us, so. There was no worries about a deployment or, you know, missing each other or anything like that. So.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point. And, you know, you talk about the strong family, but really that strong network of people around you that can support you. And, you know, how much did you have to rely on that? Because you still serve for a number of years after that.
Correct. I retired back in 2015. But we relied on it heavily, especially my parents who lived, you know, in the cities here in Roseville. And if it wasn't for them, it would have been probably a disaster for us. But we would have made it through eventually. But, you know, it was just good to have the friends, the family. We call it family with an R, family with an R, because it's so important. The network is key to being able to succeed when you're in the service as a dual military, you know, spouse.
Yeah, 100%.
So.
Yeah. And you retired at what rank?
E8.
An E8, okay.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, that, as we all know, the more rank you get, the more responsibility, and often more responsibility comes without necessarily more pay. But that time commitment is increasing because her career is growing as well. She's now Lieutenant Colonel.
Correct.
And, you know, I mean, working full time and doing public affairs stuff and doing the stuff she does out at the infantry division. I mean, even now. I would imagine that you've got some sacrifices you have to make, and that's the little hook. We're going to talk about some of that kind of stuff here in just a little bit. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll get into some other things. And I didn't say it, and I apologize, Ron. I also want to say thank you for your service as well to our nation. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. Today we're talking about Military Spouse Appreciation Month and Military Spouse Appreciation Day. In the studio with me today, I've got Christina Rost and Ron Stanger. Both of them have served in our Minnesota National Guard and both currently married to spouses who are still serving in our Minnesota National Guard. And before we went into break, we were kind of talking about, you know, some of those challenges that you're faced with as a military spouse. You two have kind of a unique experience or background in that you both served early on in the relationship while your spouse was serving as well. Christina, you ended up leaving service so Jason could pursue his career. And Ron, you continued to serve a little bit. And what I'd like to ask you about is, when you look back kind of in those early years, up until you really retired, there was still these competing things because you're both having to go to your weekend drills. You've got some training you might have to go to. So what kind of challenges did you face? Did you have some long time or long term separations in there? And how did you kind of approach that?
Yeah, we had several long term separations, especially with her career as an officer and her movement through the officer ranks. For me, my challenges were I had two daughters and had to take over the role kind of as mom, but you can't really fulfill that role. But, you know, it's, the challenges are like, what are they going to wear? How are you going to do their hair? You know, you got to become good real quick. And I know the internet was around back then, but it wasn't like today where it's just, well, just go TikTok it and we'll figure out how to do some hair, you know.
Yeah.
So challenges of dealing with the kids and getting into school and making sure we're taking care of the medical and all that. And we have a special needs daughter. So that was a whole nother world of dealing with the county, the state paperwork and school and, you know, taking care of her needs along with making sure our older daughter was part of the picture too without, you know, all the time going to our younger.
Right.
So with one parent gone, that's where our difficulties came into play. And we navigated them pretty good, but you know, can always do better too.
Sure. Now, did you master the single ponytail?
I did.
Yeah.
And yes, I did try the vacuum one with the rubber band around the vacuum.
Did that work? Does,
not really.
No.
You're better off just giving it a shot on your own. But, you know, we did it for fun just to kind of make fun of what was going on. But I did master that. I did get a braid down for a while. Lost it since then. But, you know, I could get it back if I needed to. You know,
really, so. More importantly, though, could you get it actually centered on the head?
Took a few rounds and some hair pulling and yelling and getting yelled at by the kids. But we did okay.
We did okay. I wonder, though, if it gives you really a whole new appreciation to the role of the mother in this case, right, and the importance of that figure and then how difficult it is to try to fill it in.
Very much so. You know, and when I deployed in 03, 04 and got back, you know, I had made a comment that it's easier to deploy than to be the stay-at-home spouse. And my wife argued with me until she was about 2 months in the country in her first deployment, and she said, I get it.
Yeah.
Because when you're deployed, it's your world, your three bags, your rucksack, and you. At home, you have everything. The kids, your cars, your bills, everything. So it's a lot easier to deploy than be at home. So
I'll bring Christine in this conversation in a quick second, but I do want to ask you if Murphy's Law is the same for the male staying home as it typically is for when the female stays home or the mom stays home, because everything is going to break. So did you have those types of things happen?
We did. Stuff broke. You know, thankfully, I feel I'm a pretty handy guy. So I was able to fix most of it, or you reach out to your network, you know, so family and friends, everybody helped out through all of our deployments that we went on, you know, or the long trainings that we dealt with. So, but Murphy's Law always kicks in when you don't want it to.
So it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't discriminate male, female, mom or dad. So Christina, you know, Jason's had a long career. He's still serving. Obviously, there were some deployments in there as well. So talk to us a little bit about your experiences. I mean, obviously, you know what the military is all about because you've served. But now you're experiencing it as a mother. You're experiencing it as a spouse. And you're now at home and he's gone. Mm-hmm. What kind of experience was like that for you?
Well, it gave me a lot of appreciation for single moms and dads. Because they do a ton of work. It was a lot.
Did you get a day off ever?
No.
I don't even think
I knew what that term meant, is a day off. You know, first I want to – I'm impressed that you got the braid down.
I got the braid.
Like,
it
have three daughters and I don't even have the braid down.
Well,
so
it took time.
I'm
Does
super
Jason
impressed.
Have it down?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No,
that's
no.
tough.
No. Yeah. No. So, but, yeah, I mean, we went through the same struggles, like – It's like Ron had stated, it's really about managing schedules. Like when the other spouse is gone, it's you. That's it. Like, and having a strong network of friends and family to help you like pick up the pieces, really. I mean, that's super important.
Yeah. Yeah. No like, doubt.
Yeah. Like people really need to lean into making those connections and building that support network, because I think without it, it'd be really tough.
In for the first deployment, how many kids were you taking care of at home?
Oh, I was taking care of two kids under the age of 3, and I was pregnant with the other.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I was working full time.
And you're working full time.
Yeah.
Now, how was your support network?
It was great.
Yeah.
I totally leaned into that. You know, I think a big thing that military spouses do is they don't ask for help. You know, they're prideful.
Yeah.
Not all. I'm generalizing.
Sure.
Like, I can do this on my own. I've got things taken care of. But really in that time, you have to reach out to people and ask for help. And I had a really good network of friends and in our church community who helped out. Like, there's no way I would have gotten through that without them.
Now, did you have the issue emergency or something that popped up, you know, the Murphy's Law thing? Did something just go wrong while he was gone where you're like, dang it, he should have been here. He would have taken care of this.
Well, really the biggest thing that came up, like Ron, I'm pretty handy, so I can fix
right.
things,
yeah.
You know, but I think the biggest thing actually was buying a vehicle. We just had a car and I needed to get a van, a bigger car.
Sure.
So to take out a loan, I was trying to get, you know, signatures and stuff like that. And it was, you know, that was probably the biggest challenge, but I overcame that.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's the importance of that pre-deployment stuff, right?
Right.
When you go through getting the powers of attorneys done and, you know, making sure that, but we don't generally think of those things, you
mm-hmm.
know? And I will tell you, and I'm sure you can all appreciate this, is that for the person that is actually deploying, that's usually the last thing they're even thinking about,
correct.
Right?
Oh,
so
yep.
Who's taking the time? You know, you don't necessarily have a checklist. I think it's gotten a lot better today, of course, you know, of, you know, the in-processing, out-processing, the processing in general of pre-deployment stuff. But, you know, that's just one thing that, you know, you don't even think about, or you're not even worrying yeah. about it until it happens.
And there's a lot of that happens where things happen and then you should have thought of it 6 months ago before she left or before
yeah.
I left.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens. You're like, oh, how could we be so, you know, stupid almost. You don't
right.
feel very smart at that point. So, but you navigate it and you work on your resilience and, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I remember the old days of hunt the good stuff and,
oh, yeah.
you
know,
the, yeah. And, yeah. find the good
and
stuff.
That kind of, you know, terminology. And you look into it and you use it and you make the best of it, you know, so.
Now, Christina, did Jason acknowledge that he absolutely had the easier time on the deployment than you did at home with two kids being pregnant?
I don't know that I really asked the question or that I would ask the question.
Yeah. But he knows. I'm sure he knows.
Maybe.
Jason, if you're listening. but would you agree, though? I mean, you know, to Ron's statement, you know, just the acknowledgement that, you know what? And we say it on the show all the time. The deployed person
mm-hmm.
really has it so much easier because your day's set.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like, yes, I do think so. Because they know their mission. They know exactly what they need yeah. to do. And really, like, us who are staying back, we should be taking care of that. Like, they don't need to be worrying about that stuff. They need to be worrying about their task at hand. So,
We used to joke that it was kind of like Groundhog's Day on deployment, right? I mean, it was pretty set. You knew what you're doing. You're getting up in the morning. You're doing some PT. You're getting three meals a day. You don't have to worry about cooking, you know. Sometimes, depending on where you're at, the biggest decision you might have had to make is, what am I going to drink with my dinner tonight? You know, Powerade, milk, water, pop, I don't know. So kind of an interesting thing.
And that's exactly it. I was thinking when you guys were talking about the three meals, like, the meals are set, the plan's set. For me, I got to come home and try to feed two kids plus myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how many nights I just made sure they were fed and I was exhausted, went to bed. You know, and even after being around this for so long, 3 years ago for me was, we had a lot of snow. I worked for Minnesota Department of Transportation. We were constantly plowing the roads all winter long. My wife was gone at Fort Meade, Maryland for 4 months for public affairs school, and I never had a break.
Oh,
I would go from work. And I work 12 hours, 14 hours, go home, snow blow my driveway, throw a load of laundry in, maybe get a bite to eat, go to bed, repeat.
Wow. Well, with that, I think we should take a break. Please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me today, as we recognize Military Spouse Appreciation Month and Military Spouse Appreciation Day, I've got Christina Rost and Ron Stinger. Christina's husband serves on active duty with our Minnesota Army National Guard, and Ron's wife serves on active duty with the Minnesota National Guard as well. All right, so this is our last segment together, and I think it's important. You know, you guys both have kind of this unique experience in that you've served, and then you have a spouse that's currently serving. You really understand, you know, the military aspect of things, so probably nothing really new. But there are spouses that are listening right now that might find themselves going through an experience of a long time or long-term separation because of a deployment, because of training, you know, because of something like that military related. And let's just have the both of you think back to that time when your spouse was deployed and maybe provide some advice. So maybe we'll frame it up in the term of some type of a survival guide for someone who might be experiencing this for the first time. And so, Ron, I'll start with you. What kind of advice would you have or important things you would want a spouse to know about as they might be heading into one of these deployments or long-term separations?
You know, for me, patience is key. Communication is key, right? So with my wife and I on our last two deployments, we'll say, I could send a message off to her, and normally you get the same, about same time frame message back. Sometimes that doesn't happen, right? And you can't get mad about it. You can't be upset. You just need to keep living your life because you know they may be busy, or maybe they're at the movies. Who knows? But patience is key. Communication is key. You know, and as a spouse who's at home, you have to take care of yourself. I'm a big believer, and you have to take care of yourself just as much as you take care of your kids. So go for walks, recharge your battery, do what makes you happy, you know, eat healthy, get sleep, and make sure when you do talk to your loved one overseas or at training, make it count. You know, don't talk about the little stuff, you know, worry about the big stuff, and then the little stuff will come into that that conversation anyways, and always tell each other you love him or love them or her or whoever they are, you know. So my wife and I, it's religious.
Yeah.
Even in texting. You know, it's always love you at the end of the text, you know, and some people may think that's a lot, but it works for us.
Right. Well, and if you make it as one of them shortcut things.
Shortcuts, yeah. You know, I haven't yet, but thanks. Thank you. Now she knows my trick that I'm going to do.
Christina, what about you? What would you say? What kind of advice do you have to offer?
Well, I would give some similar to what Ron was talking about communicating. Like, it's better to over-communicate than not communicate or under-communicate. And really, like, unboxing expectations, because I think the person on the deploying or leaving or going on their thing or whatever, like, they have certain expectations. People staying back have expectations, and really, like, unboxing those, and don't live in bitterness. Like, and if you're anger, like, don't sit in that, you know, feel it and then move on. Like, to not sit in that. And I would also say, like, don't put your life on pause. when your spouse is gone. Like, I think many people might do that, but you can't. You gotta keep going. You gotta keep doing, like, making fun choices, going on trips. Like, it's, you can't put it on pause because they're not putting it on pause. They're right. doing their thing. So you continue doing that stuff. And then I would also mention about building a strong network. Like, if you don't have one, start building it now so that it's in place when that person goes away or does their trip. Because I think without that, it's really hard.
Yeah. I really like what you said about unboxing those expectations, because mm-hmm. you have to lay those things out. You know, I remember there would be a time, you know, in my deployment where, you know, I finally get the opportunity to make a phone call, and then, like, nobody's on the other end to answer the darn phone.
Right.
And you're like, this was my one shot. I remember back in what I call the good war, you know, the Gulf War, you know, we had to drive quite a distance to get to a phone bank, wait in line for a half an hour, hour and a half to get 10 minutes. And when you, it just rings. Oh, how mm-hmm. frustrating that is, you know. But you're exactly point or correct. That's a conversation you got to have on the front end. Mm-hmm. You can't put your life on pause. You still got things to do with the kids. Mm-hmm. You still got to go and have some entertainment and live your life. And, you know, if you're lucky, maybe you can establish kind of a battle rhythm of when you might be able to have that communications. Obviously, it's a lot easier today mm-hmm. than it was back then. But that's some great advice. One of the things that I think is extremely important to talk about as well, and I want to make sure we get to this before we run out of time, is not only do we have this lead up to the leaving, but then we've got the lead up to the coming home and the actual coming home. And so you both have experienced it on both sides. And so that same person that might be experiencing a deployment or this long-term separation for the first time is also going to experience the homecoming for the first time. And so, Christina, this time I want to start with you. Talk to us about some advice you might have in preparation for that homecoming.
Mm-hmm. I would say the biggest thing for us was, like, giving that person some time when they get home to do whatever they need to do. And then knowing when the time is, like, all right, you've had your time. Now you're back in reality. Let's talk about these things. But I think if you expect, again, it all goes back to unboxing these expectations.
Sure.
Because when they come home, they have a certain expectation. Like, wait, what happened to the house? Like, what are all these changes? And then they come back and start trying to be the person they were when they left initially, but it's all changed.
When
you know,
I
when
came home from Iraq, my son had black hair. Now, he's a blonde. That would have never happened if I was home,
right.
but I had to accept the fact
right.
that was a decision yep. made while I was gone, and, well, there it is.
That's right.
Ron, what about you? What kind of advice do you have?
Based off what she was saying, it's kind of the same thing. When my wife came home the last two times, she comes home different. Left loving country, came back listening to KS 95. You know, even the what they like to do changes, right? And about the time deal, I did have a conversation on the last go around. I said, you have till February to figure this out.
Yeah.
Because we got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And she agreed. She understood what I was saying,
yeah.
right? My wife is a huge introvert, right? She came home at Christmas. Christmas is all about gathering with a lot of people. And if you know anything about me, I love to cook, and I cook a lot, and we have a lot of people, right? So I said, we can either meet all these people individually, or we can do it in one shot and get it done. And she's like, I'll take one shot and get it done, but I need a break after that.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. You know, they need their time. We need our time, mm-hmm. too, as spouses at home to kind of mix back together, get the relationship going. You know, talk a lot, and that's where communication and patience comes into play, because you have to work back your relationship that's been on hold in theory from seeing each other for however long they were gone, and we've done really well at that every time, but it takes time
yeah.
to rebuild that relationship. And my wife always says, if you're tired of me, go take a nap. You know, and
it might be you, not me.
Yeah, right, right. And it just depends who it is coming home.
Right.
So you got to have the patience.
Yeah. And, you know, and not all deployments are the same. Not all locations of the deployment are the same. Not all ranks react to the homecoming the same. So you can't say because you might have had higher responsibility that, you know, your return is going to be different. Everybody is different. Everybody's experience is different. And I think that's extremely important to understand as well.
Oh, yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
All right. So we've only got a minute here. Christina, any last words, great advice, anything you'd like to say to our military spouses or the community in general?
Well, I was going to say, when for military spouses who are in this for the long haul, I like to think of it a little bit like sourdough bread. So you have to feed your starter consistently all the time. Like, you can leave it for a couple weeks at a time, and then you have to, like, you have to take very good care, and you have to feed it a little bit more until it gets active and ready to bake a great bread loaf.
Yeah, I love
and that's
it.
Kind of
right.
like our military, you know, spouses and our marriages. If you don't take the time to feed that starter over and over consistently, it's going to be really hard to, like, have a really good, strong foundation. So that would be my one piece of advice, is
awesome.
Just feed it all the
Thank
time.
Thank you. Ron?
Yeah, real quick. I know Christina and her husband, my wife and I are both thankful for all those community support that happens around here. There's organizations everywhere trying to give back to our service members. And I have chills right now talking about it because that's how important it is. We have to stick together. The military is not going anywhere. It's going to stay around forever.
Yeah.
And we have to support it and support the troops going and coming. So
awesome. Well, hey, I appreciate both of you. Again, thank you both for your service. Thanks for the support of your spouse, because we do know that in order for those who serve to keep on serving and have it to be a good career, you got to have that, not only the support network, but obviously the support at home from your spouse. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. So we appreciate you both. I hope that things continue to go well for you. And again, just thanks so much. That's Christina Rost and Ron Stanger. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me for this final segment of today's show is Rich Kemp. Rich retired from the Minnesota Army National Guard back in 2013 at the rank of Master Sergeant. He was working in the Public Affairs Office, and he currently works at the Minnesota Department of Transportation in their Public Affairs Office. An item of note is that the Minnesota Department of Transportation, did I say Department of Veterans Affairs before, Rich?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I screwed that up. Interesting item of note is that the DOT was proclaimed a BYTR organization, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon organization, back in 2023. Now, Rich, you're here. This is one of many times you've actually been with us on Minnesota Military Radio, and you're here today to talk about the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp. So before we do that, Rich, thanks for your service and welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
It is wonderful to see you. You and I served together. We've spent a lot of time together. I've known you, I don't even know for how many years.
Quite a few.
Quite a few years, at least 20 years, probably a little bit more. So tell us just a little bit about you, Rich. We only get you for like 9 minutes here, and I want our audience to know a little bit about you. We know you served in the Army National Guard for a number of years, but what led you to the Guard? And then more importantly, because of today's topic, what got you involved in the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp?
Well, I don't want to spend much time talking about me because I want to talk about the camp. But
yeah, for sure.
I did spend 32 years in the Guard. 23 of it as an active Guard soldier, so I was full-time. And as you said, I retired in 2013, went to MnDOT, and I've been involved with the youth camp since day one when it started in 1991.
And so you were serving on active duty at the time then,
correct?
Right? And this idea of a youth camp came about. Tell us a little bit about why the idea came up. I mean, what really was the genesis of the youth camp?
Our adjutant general at the time was Gene Andreotti, and his thing was to support the families and those kids that, you know, their parents are deploying. At that time, there wasn't much deploying going on, but they were still gone weekends and 2 weeks every summer. But then gradually it became they were gone for 3 months to a year.
And that kind of changed the mission set of youth camp. Didn't it? I mean, I remember when in my first involvement with it, really the conversation started switching to bringing kids together who now have this similar experience of parents or other relatives that have been deployed or maybe are currently deployed.
Exactly. And so they're with other kids who are going through the same situation. You know, in their school, kids might not understand what they're going through, but at the camp, they meet other kids who are going through the same exact thing.
All right. So the adjutant general at the time, he had this idea. How did you then get involved? Did he come to you and say, hey, Rich, we want to do this thing? Or what was kind of the how did he get going? And then when were you brought in? Because I know you were a major player in getting this thing up and running.
Well, they came to the recruiting command, which is where I worked at the time. And several folks in the recruiting command actually were on the initial board of directors. And which my boss was.
Okay. Oh, so just by virtue of that, you you had to get involved.
But I mean, I've loved being around kids forever, and so it was a perfect fit for me.
Yeah. Now, Rich, we will run out of time, and I do want to make sure we get through the good stuff, right? So the camp has been going on, you know, since 91, and you had like 100 kids that went to that first camp, I think, and then – what is the makeup now? How do you get the kids together? How is it organized? How many kids? How many weeks? You know, what does that look like?
When we first started out, we had just 10 to 13-year-old kids. And then 10 years in, we started teen camp, which was 13 to 15-year-olds. And then now we made another change 2 years ago where we split the ages up to 10 and 11-year-olds are in one group. And then 12 and 13-year-olds are in another group. And then 14 and 15 are in another group. We just thought there was too much of a spread in the ages where kids together.
Yeah.
And so we kind of split up the groups there. And so we no longer have teen camp. It's all youth camp.
Okay. But different activities or a different program or some nuances anyway based on what age group they're in?
Right. We don't want to have the same thing every time because the kids will get bored if they've been through swimming every year for,
right,
you know, 5 years or whatever it is, or biking, or but a lot, they do a lot of the things that you do at a normal camp. We just add in, we teach them how to march, or maybe teach us how to march. I'm not sure. And they sleep in the barracks where their parents or aunt or uncle or grandparent would have slept, and eat in the dining facility just like they did.
Yeah. Now, Rich, you know, I know it's up at Camp Ripley, but that has got to be a great resource for the youth camp to be able to do it in a training site that our Minnesota National Guard uses heavily, as well as other branches of the military.
Right. We couldn't do it without the help of Camp Ripley and all the people that work there, the commander, everybody. They're great supporters for us. And, yeah, it just works great being able to do it there.
And you talked about the age groups. You've got two separate weeks that you do youth camp. What are the dates for this year?
This year, the first week is July 26th through August 1st and August 2nd through the 8th. And so each week is a different group of kids.
But the same three groupings. So two separate camps, but, you know, 2 weeks back to back. So 1 week total for each age group that's signing up for the camp.
And now that we switched the ages of the camps, there's actually six groups now.
Six groups?
Yes.
Okay, so before, you got to tell me real quick. You got to catch me up.
So before we had enough kids to have three teams for the younger group. Now we have four.
Okay.
And then the two older groups, there's two groups with the older kids.
Wow. And Rich, this must take a ton of volunteers. So talk to us about the needs for volunteers and how people or what the criteria might be if someone might be interested in volunteering for a week up at Camp Ripley or a few days, depending on their skill set.
It is totally run by volunteers. And so we really appreciate everybody that can help. You can volunteer for 1 week or both weeks. And the places where we need help are bus drivers, lifeguards, and medics. And otherwise, you can go up there and be a counselor and work with the kids all day long, every day. It's long days. Let me tell you, you get tired. Or you can work in an activity. You know, we have archery, rifle range, biking, canoeing, and swimming. A lot of different activities that you could help out with, too, if you don't want to be around the kids all day long.
And so MNGYC, so Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp, MNGYC.org. And yes. If someone goes to that website, they can see the activities. They could find out what kind of volunteer opportunities might exist. What about registration, Rich? We got just over a minute and 15. So what are the qualifications? What does someone need to do to register? Any criteria?
You go onto that website, and it'll have a link to register, and go on there and register. Initially, the campers will be put on a waiting list until they're confirmed that they are, you know, a child of a military person or a National Guard person. But I also want to real quick mention we have a golf tournament on June 23rd.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that here. Helps
helps raise money for the camp. It's on June 23rd. It's at Bunker Hills. If you have questions, you can contact me or email us at camps@mngyc.org.
And so that's the major fundraiser for the year. Obviously, there's a fee for the camp. It's not a very large fee when you start comparing it to other camps that take place for what they get. It's a pretty small fee, isn't it?
Yes, it's under $200. And you figure for a week of feeding your child and
yeah.
And all the things that they go
so it's
through.
A vacation for the parents, although
exactly.
We would love to have that parent volunteer to help get that list down. All right, Rich, one more time. What is the website you want people to go to?
It's mngyc.org.
That is the place to go. Go there, get information, volunteer, donate, go to the golf tournament, do all those things.
Everything on that website.
All right, awesome. Hey, Rich Kemp, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us here for a few minutes.
Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Great to see you. And I'd like to say thank you all for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. Our goal is to bring you meaningful, informative content each week. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions. Visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us. You can also catch up on past shows on Minnesota Military Radio on the podcast, wherever it is that you listen, and of course at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Be sure to tune in next week as we spend some time with the United States Navy. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. Have a productive week, and please take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.